We began last week going through the Mark and the Hebrew and Aleph, and we'll continue in the text. Basically, just to catch us up. So the first part of this is 15 relationships, which are disqualified for people. In other words, if a man dies without leaving any heirs, his brother is already obligated to leave you. That's the however, and that of course, by definition, entails burying. Normally, it's a burial.
Suspicious. But when you think about it and untangle it, it isn't really suspicious at all. Meaning his daughter married his brother. A man can marry his niece. It doesn't happen anymore every day, but it's a legal relationship. So his daughter, if Shimon's daughter married Reuven, the brother of Shimon, in other words, Reuven married his niece, then Reuven died and didn't leave any heirs. So now Shimon the brother is confronted with a Yibum situation with his own daughter. That's one of the 15 cases of the Mishnah. Or if not his daughter, right, so let's say it's his daughter-in-law, meaning his son was married to a woman, right, and let's say the son divorced or died, as the case may be. And then this woman married his brother, in other words, Shimon's daughter-in-law, former daughter-in-law, married Reuven. And now Reuven dies, leaves no children, so the former daughter-in-law is now the present sister-in-law. Right? The halacha is, that's one of the 15 arayos of the Mishnah, and the rule is that there is no Yibum and no Chalitza. But the Mishnah doesn't say only that, as we've discussed. The Mishnah tells us that not only are these 15 arayos, right, excluded from Yibum and Chalitza, but they also exclude or disqualify the co-wives that come with them as a package. By which we mean, again, taking the Reuven, Shimon, Levi, we'll keep a nice group to remember. So let's say Reuven had, in pre-Rabbeinu Gershom times, let's say he had three wives, right? He had three wives. One of them is the daughter of Shimon, because he married his niece. But he also married two other women, right, who have no connection to Shimon. So one might have thought, and indeed this is the view of Beis Shammai, in the Mishnah on Yud Gimel Amud Aleph, Beis Shammai is of the opinion, well, the daughter of Shimon, of course, is excluded as a candidate for Yibum Chalitza. But the other two wives of Reuven, sounds a little like Henry, VIII, but, only three wives in this case, the other wives of Reuven, right, are perfectly good candidates for, never mind Chalitza, but also for Yibum. They're called Tsaros of each other. Tsaros means rivals or co-wives. So Beis Shammai's opinion is that there's absolutely no reason why Shimon, the brother of Reuven, cannot be Miyabim, one of the other two of the other three wives. Beis Hillel, however, disagrees, and we possibly like Beis Hillel. So the rule is that one of the 15 ervas of the Mishnah not only is disqualified for Yibum v'chalitza, but also disqualifies the co-wives. So any of these wives, because of the presence within the group of the daughter, right, or the mother-in-law, or the sister-in-law, or the daughter-in-law, as the case may be, would be excluded. That's the Mishnah. The Mishnah says not only that, but the erva is excluded, the tsaras erva is excluded, that's what I just described, and even tsaras erva ad sofa olam, meaning if there's a third brother, let's say there's Reuven, Shimon, and Levi. So Reuven has three wives, one of whom is the daughter of brother Shimon, meaning the niece of Reuven. And there's also a brother Levi, right? So let's say Reuven dies, so Shimon cannot be Miyabim or Choletz, any of Reuven's three wives, because included among the three wives is his daughter. So they're all Tsaros and they're excluded. However, thankfully, there's always good old Levi, Right? Levi is not, it is the uncle, right, of one of the wives of Reuben. But as we know, that's not a problem. That's not an impediment. That's how Reuben was able to marry this woman to begin with. So he has his choice to marry any of the three wives, to be miyabin, any of the three wives of Reuben. That's the situation. However, Levi has his own two wives, right? So Levi marries not the daughter of Shimon, but one of the other two wives of Reuben, right? And he had two wives of his own previously. And then Levi dies without leaving any children. So Shimon, once again, is a candidate for Yibam. Now the three that he faces do not include his daughter, right? She was part of the Reuben package, and that's all, you know, past history. However, it does include one of the co-wives of his daughter when his daughter was married to Reuben. In other words, a tsaras erba is in the mix for Shimon right now when he confronts, right, the wives of brother number two, Levi. Oh, so that's called tsaras erba, and that too is disqualified. That's the Mishnah. Okay. So then the Gemara on Gimel Amud Aleph, after discussing the order of the Mishnah, the order of the Arayos, and we discussed some issues related to that as well. So then the Gemara wants to know about the language of the Mishnah. And that's what we're up to, and that's what we're going to discuss right now. So the Gemara says on Gimel Amud Aleph, Umay Iria, this is a little bit more than 50% down the page, a little more. The last two words of the line are Umay Iria. If I can count if it'll help. 3, 6, 9, 12, 15, about 17 lines up from the bottom. Nice. Always show me up. Photostats and Xeroxes. And now the Gilyan Ashas. Okay, very good. Across from the Gilyan, it's like, you know, it's Kinas Ophrim, right?
Kinas Ophrim, my
Oh, hopefully not. So Gilyan Ashas across, exactly across from the Gilyan Ashas, Umay Iria. Everybody have that? Okay, so Umay Iria, the Tana Potros, Lisni Osros. The Mishnah uses a strange lashon, right? The 15 erbas are Potros Tsaroseim, but Tsaros Tsaroseim ad Sofa Olam. What do you mean Potros exempt? After all, as the way Rashi interprets, I'm going to suggest a different pshat. I don't know if I'll do it today, but in general, I'm going to try to suggest a different shot. But Rashi says, what's the question? Look at Rashi on the second of the wider lines. Three levels of lines here, right? So the second level of wide lines, the wider lines, the middle lines, the last word on the second line. My area the katani potros, Rashi says, the mashma pturosain the iboi miyabe. The way Rashi understands the question, if I say potros, it means that there's no obligation to do Yibam B'chalitza. But it sounds like there's no prohibition to do it either. It's a rishus. If I say osros, right, then it's prohibited. Now, on the surface, it's prohibited because I can't be miyabin my daughter. I can't be miyabin my daughter-in-law. I can't be miyabin my mother-in-law, my grandmother-in-law, right? My granddaughter. It's not a rishus. I'm confronted with an iser. So it should have said, says Rashi, I mean, the Gemara says this, but Rashi's explanation, not potros tsaroseim, but osros tsaroseim. Ah, how come it doesn't? So the Gemara says, itana osros, havamina osro liyabim, aval michlatz choltza. One might have thought, if you focus on iser, so it sounds like, what's the problem? The maitzavera that you are now, you know, confronted with. You have a mitzvah of Yibum, and you have an Iser of Erva, Bito, right? Chamid. So that's an Osros problem. Why can't you do Chalitza? Right? There's nothing in the act of Chalitza that violates Din Torah with an Erva. So therefore, the Gemara uses the Mishnah uses the expression, not Osros, which would have implied a Yibum, but not a Chalitza problem, but Potros, to tell you that the exemption or the disqualification is of greater scope. Okay, so itad osros havamina osol yavim, avol michlatz koltza kamash mala. That's the shock of the tari. Oh, now then the Gemara says the lisni asura lachlot. Right, So the Gemara says, my kavod. You can't say asura lachlot because there is no isur chalitza. What's wrong with doing chalitza? I mean, it's not a very, it's not a very appealing ceremony, but there's no isur to do any of the actions involved in chalitza. So the Gemara says, Allah malo. Maybe it should be asur. Not min haTorah, but min rabbanan. Why? Because imat omer chaletzes, misya bemes. If you tell people that, you can do chalitza, or if you allow chalitza, people will be under the impression that this is a typical case of zika and yibum and chalitza. And they'll say, oh, in this case, they opted for chalitza. But in theory, you have the option of yibum as well. Oh, therefore, they avoid the expression asuros, right, even with respect to chalitza. Okay. So then, so if that's the case, then we're back to the original question, why the language of Potros? So the Gemara says, Kivin to the Mokom Mitzvah, Huda Sira, Tzara, the Shalom Mokom Mitzvah, Sharia, Mishumachi, Tani, Potros. Ah, what does this mean? So if you looked very quickly at the Mishnah on Yud Gimel Amud Aleph, already we're getting to a little bit of a complicated issue, but one which we need to confront. The Mishnah says here, this is the same Mishnah that I referred to earlier, about Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel, about Tzaros. So the Mishnah has a Hakdama. Mishnah says, Sheish Arayos Chamuros Ne'elu. Right? Our Mishnah has 15 Arayos, 15 relationships that are disqualified for Yibam. There are 6 more relationships that are even more intense. What do we mean by more intense, or Chamuros Ne'elu? In the sense that, Mipnei Shenesuos Lacheren. Because these are relationships which are so close that they could only be married, right, to outsiders. These are people who couldn't even be married to a brother, so that you'll never have a case of Yibum. Right? For example, as we'll see, this will be the next line of the Mishnah. So all these 6 cases, as we'll explain in a moment, Tsaroseyan Mutaros. The co-wives of these Ervas are Mutar. As we'll see in a moment, not in the context of Yibum. I'll explain in just 1 minute. For example, who are they? This will explain it. Emo, his mother, right? Ashes Aviv, his stepmother, right? Achos Aviv, his aunt from his father's side. Achoso Me Aviv, his sister from his father's side. The Ashes Achi Aviv, right? The wife of his uncle, right, his fraternal uncle, his uncle from his father's side, the Ashes Achiv Me'aviv, and his sister-in-law, in a case where there are children, let's say, right, his sister-in-law, the wife of his brother from his father. Okay, what's the point of these cases? The point of these cases are that they're all connected to the father. And since they're connected to the father, therefore, they're as prohibited to the brother from the father as they are to you. Part of the cases of the 15 in our Mishnah are relatives either through marriage. We'll talk about Shimon, right? The potential Yavam, right? Reuven's the older brother, let's say, or the brother who died, and Shimon is the potential Yavam. So in the case of the Mishnah of Beis Amud Aleph, the 15 Arayos have to be cases. You have to construct a case where my brother could legally be married to this woman, but she's prohibited to me. How could that be? The answer is none of them can be by virtue of the connection to the father. They all have to be connected through my marriage, me, Shimon, my marriage, or my mother, assuming that my brother, right, and I are from different mothers. So then you can have cases where he legally married this woman, but now that he died, she is a problematic relationship to me. But the Sheish Arayos of the Mishnah, Yud Gimel Amud Aleph, are all connected through, they're all biologically connected, and through the father. Which means that there's never a Hechetimtzia evil, because they can have, just as they can't be related to me, they can't be married to me, they can't be married to my brother either. Okay, so that's what the means of the Mishnah says. Sheish Arayos Kamurim Eim Ubedeshim Nesuol Tzacherim. These women are so close that they can only be married to people other than my brother, and therefore there'll never be a Yibum case.
So how did that include the 6th case?
Ashes with our children.
but that's not like the other five.
Okay, good. That's true. But they just wanted to show that, you know, Eshesachabeyavid can never, meaning my, if my sister-in-law from my brother's side, like let's say, but what a brother who either is divorced or died but has children, so she has that status. She can never be married to my other brother from my father. In that sense, it's the same, right? So the point of all this is: so what does it mean when we say that soros and mutaros? We associate soros, right, co-wives and their status, the package of wives, with Yibum, right? So what's it talking about in this Mishnah? This is a Mishnah that basically says that. What is the Mishnah telling us? One might have thought the following. Look at the, just very quickly, Rashi. Rashi says, here, Shesharayos Yesh, Shechamuros Me'elu, which are even more chomer than the ones in the first Mishnah, the Mishnah of the base, Umau Chomer Shalem Shenesuos Lacherim, Ve'enon Yecholim Lehinasel Achim Be'avim. They cannot conceivably be married to your brother from your father. So the rule is in Mesu Baleim Shein Nachrios Eitzel Zeh, Tzoroseyen Mutaros Lehinase Lazeh. Meaning, let's say, right, my sister from my father, not from my mother, my sister from my father was married to some man, right, can't be my brother, some stranger family-wise, right? And that man had two other wives. So this man was married to my sister from my father, and he was also married to two wives who had no connection to me whatsoever. The man dies. Right? Is there any problem to marry one of these two wives? Because they happen to be co-wives with my sister? That's what the Mishnah says. There's no problem. Meaning co-wives is only a problem in the context of a package of potential Yibum candidates, if one can say it that way. But per se, the fact that people were bundled, Sara means either rival or bundle, both. The fact that people were together, right, in a marital, larger marital context, right, does not identify one with the other and create a psul. Now, isn't it remarkable? I don't want to, put words in your mouth. I don't want to, convince you of something that isn't the case. But I'm just asking: is it not remarkable that that there would be a havamina, that there would be a notion of tsaros erva outside of Yibum? That the Mishnah needs to tell us that it isn't so. Because you might have thought that if my sister, right, is married to this man, and at the same time there are two other wives, in other words, they're all living together under the same household, the fact that she has a shame, tsaros erva, makes her excluded to me in the future as a potential wife. And the Mishnah is saying, even though these arayos are actually even more intense and more chomer than the ones in the first Mishnah, the ones in the first Mishnah disqualify not only themselves, but disqualify the co-wives. But this more intense erva doesn't disqualify the co-wives. That's what this Mishnah is telling us. Now, if you go back to our Gemara now, on Gimel Amud Aleph, so that's what the Gemara is telling us. The language of Potros is intended to tell you that the din of Tzaras Erva is limited to Yibum and doesn't apply outside of Yibum. We'll read it inside. The Gemara says, Kivan de Bemoko Mitzvah Huda Sira Tzara, in the context of the Mitzvah of Yibum, right there we have the din of Tzaras Erva. The Shalom Bemoko Mitzvah Shari. However, outside of the context of the mitzvah Yibum, when you're simply dealing with a status of a co-wife, namely my sister had two co-wives with some other man, and now the question is, can I marry one of those co-wives after divorce or death of that man? There's no din of Tzaras erba mishum hachi tani potros. The language of potros, as opposed to osros, is intended to convey that. How so? Let's look at Rashi just for a second. So Rashi says, kiven devamokot mitzvahs yibum huda asira tzaretz abbas. Right? The co-wife of my daughter is excluded only in the context of the mitzvah of yibum. Kim mefarish v'mas nisen demisha patra kosov mizikas yibum kaimele be'eshes ach sheyesh lo banim. Since, right, the zika, we'll explain this more fully in a minute, meaning the connection that is created when a brother dies and doesn't leave any heirs, the zika that is created between the brother and all of his wives, right, is something that cannot be implemented in one, the daughter, and therefore that affects the other tsaros as well, right? So that's limited to b'makom mitzvah. But shelo b'makom mitzvah, shari kagon, nochri shenasa chasno, let's say, some stranger, I mean, it's not stranger anymore, married a daughter, right? Not this, you have a son-in-law. Velo isha cheres, let's say the son-in-law has another wife. In other words, my daughter is co-wives, right, with another wife, etc. Exactly what we just described a second ago. Umes, right, the son dies, right? So muteris ishto l'chaviv, can the father-in-law marry not his daughter chas v'shalom, but the co-wife of his daughter, namely his son-in-law's former wife number two of his son-in-law. The chronology isn't important. Can on the kaman gabishesh arayis chamuris meilu
v'masnis. Wouldn't that establish it so right away?
I'm sorry.
Wouldn't that establish it so right away?
What do you mean?
Because what we had lately, he was able to take from the other two.
You're saying the very fact that there's a tzara shows you that there's no tzara of a regular yibum shelo b'makom mitzvah.
Right.
Yeah, that's true.
We didn't have to go through that mission. We established it right away.
Very good.
Tzara.
Right, it's a good point. I guess the idea of the mission is because there are rivals which are even more chamuros, so maybe you think, oh, at least there you'd have this. But it's a good point. How do we get this from the language? Just 1 second. Mishumachi tani potros, says Rashi, di tani osros mashma shabbas osrasa olav likach. This is very fascinating. Rashi says, if you use the language of osros, it sounds like the way that tsaras erva works is that the one that's osur to you, let's say your daughter, right, she contaminates, right, she prohibits her co-wives to you. Like her status, in other words, spreads or impacts on the others. That's osros. And then you would say, well, the kal v'chomer shelo b'makom mitzvah. Because, number one, there's no urgency here. It's not like the mitzvah's yibum. And you'd even, you know, leave these wives alone. They're the co-wives of your daughter, right? And her being part of the mix, right, spreads a certain status or stature of Iser by virtue of that. And there's no counter-pressure. There's no mitzvah yibum. Aval potros, if you say potros, lo mishtamea isura mishum tzarasa shabas, el abas potrosa miyibum, bi isura shachav alei mimela, to have a bi isura eishas ach, shi yesh rabanim, u mishum eishas ach, with a mitzvah, shi yesh rabanim, mitzvah, the lake isura eishas ach, alei shor. We'll challenge this later on, but Rashi says something very important. Rashi explains here what he thinks tzaras erva is really about. What he thinks tzaras erva is about is eishas ach. Meaning, in the context of Yibum, what happens? Right? You start off, you have a sister-in-law, she's one of the heirs. The brother dies, he leaves no heirs. All of a sudden, you have a conflict, you have a tension, you have a kind of a dialectic, right? On the one hand, the potential, all the wives are Eishes Ach. On the other hand, there's a mitzvah Yibum. And this Eishes Ach, right, is potentially looming. In other words, in the classic case, that's what Yibum is. It says that the mitzvah of Yibum, right, overrides or redefines the Iser of Eishes Ach. But if for some reason you can't implement Eishes Ach smoothly, says Rashi, then what happens? Not only is there no Yibum, but there's a return to Eishes Ach. So what happens here? You have three women, all candidates for Yibum. But one of them is not a candidate at all because she's his daughter. So that interferes with this smooth transition to Yibum. So the way Rashi explains it, what then happens? The Iser Esh Esach returns with a vengeance. Right? Not only on the daughter, but on the other two as well, because he's supposed to have the right to choose whichever one, and one of the choices doesn't exist. That interferes with the whole mechanism of Yibum. Once there's no Yibum, there's Esh Esach. If she's Esh Esach, then she's Asura. So it's not just a din Saras Erva. Saras Erva, because that's why Rashi reads it, becomes Esh Esach. But Shelo b'makom mitzvah, if you're talking about a situation, I had a son-in-law and he had three wives, my daughter and two other wives. He died, right? So now the question is, can I marry one of the other two co-wives? There's no Esh Esach type of problem. All there is a woman who, she was never related to me. She was related to my daughter. She was like the co-wife of my daughter, but she was never related to me. Right? And therefore, there's no comparable Saratah. So what Rashi's saying in the reading of the Gemara is very fascinating. He's basically suggesting two models. I want you to, because I'm going to come back to this, two models of how to understand Saras Erva. One way to understand Saras Erva is that it's a function of the framework and the return, therefore, of Esh Esach. Every time in the context of Yibum that you have Saras Erva, what we're really saying is, since you don't have a smooth Yibum, right, we reinstitute Esh Esach. And when you have Esh Esach, the Saras Erva isn't just Saras Erva anymore. What is it really? It's Erva. To use the language of the Gemara, the Gemara says later on, whenever Yibum doesn't work, it's Ki'ilu, she's Eishes Ach, she Eishla Banyan. As if there were children, there aren't any children here. Meaning, you have the full-fledged prohibition of Eishes Ach. So is she really Saras Erva? If she's Saras Erva, then what happens? She becomes Erva. But in the context, there could have been another way to understand Saras Erva. And that is, not guilt, but disqualification by association, let's call it. What do I mean, disqualification by association? Not only, and let me explain it just even better. We've talked about it a little bit, we talked about it last week when we talked about the hierarchy, different types of sisters-in-law and which ones are closer, right? When you choose your sister-in-law, the sister of your wife, as opposed to the sister-in-law, the wife of your brother. We've talked about the Ramban and Tosis and Rashi. Right? So one of the things I tried to explain was, in the Parsha of Arayos, in the Torah, in Vayikra, right, sometimes the Torah speaks directly about the Erva, as if it's a relationship, right? It's a relative. And other times the Torah underscores the rivalry, right, with the connector, right? Giva kenaf aviv. If you're involved, right, with your stepmother, right, even if she's no longer married to your father, Gila Kanaf. What that really is it's an unacceptable, right, rivalry, betrayal of your father. If you take that mentality, right, that it isn't just about the connections, in other words, how do we get to a stepmother being prohibited? Through the father. How do we get to a sister-in-law being prohibited? Through the brother. Right? So one way to look at it, these are just the mechanisms that expand relationships, relatives. But how you relate, she's your sister-in-law, she's your daughter-in-law, she's your mother-in-law, she's your stepmother. Or no, the mechayiv in each case is the connecting point. This is a very deep and important question. We might distinguish between erva and yerusha and psulei edus, right? There's a whole philosophy of the halacha of relatives, right, and different types of relationships. When is it Mishpachas Av? When is it Mishpachas Aim? How far does it go? What about Tumas Krovim? Right, all sorts of issues. But the point I'm trying to make is that if you emphasize not the connections and then the make it into an intrinsic relationship, but you say, it's always Agav, but it's a marital thing in particular, it's always Agav, it's the rivalry and the betrayal of your blood relative. It's a betrayal of your brother. It's a betrayal of your son. It's a betrayal of your father. So if that's the idea, then by extension, how peculiar is it to say that there's some notion called Saras Erva? meaning. Now, it isn't exactly the same thing, obviously, because we're not talking about a marital relationship. We're talking about a shared co-wives, rival, you know, wives relationship. Meaning, your daughter was married to Plony, and Plony had two other wives. Right? So it's true that, you know, you're not related to those two other wives, but on some level, is there something inappropriate? Is there a shame? Tsaras erva? Is there a you know, this was your wife's, your daughter's co-wife. This was your daughter-in-law's co-wife. This was your mother-in-law's or your mother's co-wife. If it isn't about the connections and expanding, you know, relatives, it's about that rivalry and the betrayal of that rivalry. Meaning, this has to be a certain level of tsnius. You know, you can't, you know, you have to stay far away from your daughters and your mothers and your mother-in-law's marriage and marriages. Right? It's just a much healthier thing. Right? That for sure is true. Right? So the idea that somehow you're going to be married to your daughter's former co-wife, you know, is it's a little bit dicey. You know, that's the Havamina, I think. That there's a shame, Tsaras Erva.
Your Tsara, her Tsara becomes a mother-in-law.
Say that again?
Her Tsara.
I'm pretending that I don't understand the joke. Okay.
No, when he marries his daughter's Tsara, before she was...
Oh, you're saying then the Tsara, who used to be her co-wife, now becomes her mother-in-law.
Yeah, right.
So that's what I'm saying. Meaning, out of respect for the nature of these relationships, right? And especially the sanctity of the, you know, the discreetness, right, and the tznius of each household is my suggestion, right? We could understand how, because the Mishnah is telling us on Yud Gimel Aleph, you might have thought that Arayos, Achamuros, even Yoser would have tzoros, and that's what the Gemara is saying here as well. And the way Rashi's reading it, it depends if you use the language of Potros or the language of Ostros. If you use the language of Ostros, what we're really saying is that relationship that these two people share as co-wives, right, is something which stamps them, right, in a way, right, that continues to have impact, right, on the relationships that they can have in the future. That's Ostros. If it's Potros, then it's a whole different kind of idea. It's the idea of, you know what, there's no connection, there's no chalos, tsaras erva. I think there is still. I'll explain later. But at least, you don't, that's not the whole story. Right? The idea is, this group doesn't have a smooth path to Yibum. Right? Eisesach is looming, and tsaras erva is erva. So this is a little bit the Havamina Maskar of the Gemara. We'll see in a minute, and we'll continue to see that these two perspectives on Tsaras Erva and some
why can't you say that
trickier formulations.
There was a concept of Yibum from a father to a...
And therefore?
Yehuda.
Yeah, we talked about it a little bit.
Yeah,
in our Kedama.
With the daughter-in-law.
Yeah.
So therefore, that relationship of a father to a daughter, maybe since the concept of Yibum existed...
Okay, I don't know, that's an interesting idea, maybe. I don't know if you need to say that, and I don't know whether you want to say that, but I think it's an idea, it's an interesting idea, maybe, that you could say that. Meaning, there are a lot of other issues, as you can understand, that you're touching on. Meaning, what is the relationship between pre- and post-Matan Torah? How different are those worlds, conceptually, legally? But 100%. I mean, the truth is, just since you raise it, I mean, the Ramban, you know, has this amazing line, in his Perush Al HaTorah and Parshas, I don't think we read that part of it because we had to truncate our Hakdama because we did some Yom Narayim Shirim, but which is fine and good. But the Ramban in Parshas Vayeshev, when he talks about the whole Yehuda story, so he has a line where he says it's true that, you know, post Matan Torah there's no longer any Yibum between a father and a daughter-in-law, but the idea that Lechatchila, right, when there's no erva, right, there should be some family responsibility, you know, even to the point of marriage, when it doesn't trample on any yisurim, right, to safeguard the future of you know, this kind of a wife or family relations. He says that concept we do carry over from pre-Matan Torah. Very much like what you're saying. Whether the chalos parts, I don't know, but the Ramban actually does have that line in Parashas Vayeshev, and I think other Rishonim think that it's not so simple. Okay, so let's continue. So you can just see it's a very fascinating Shakavatari of the Gemara, and the way Rashi understands the words potros and ostros, I'm trying to point out, reflect already two ideas of Tzara Serba. Let's continue another line, and then we'll get back to this. So the Gemara says, and the Gemara continues and says, Umay iriyah d'tani mina chalitza umina yibum. Why do we need to say mina chalitza umina yibum both? Lisni mina yibum l'chudei. Why not only say potros as opposed to osros? But it's already conveying this idea that saras erba is limited to the b'mokom mitzvah yibum. Why do we need to say the words chalitza? So the Gemara says, even though we didn't have a sufficient explanation before, when we said that the reason for potros and osros was because of chalitza, right? The idea that we expressed before is still relevant, right, for part of the language of the Mishnah. I mean, namely, itana mina yibum. If it said potros only mina yibum, it's true we'd know about the din of tzaras erva being limited to b'mokom mitzvah, to yibum, not applying anywhere else. However, Havamina michlatz cholza yevume lo miyedma. I still would have thought that the only thing that you can't do in the case of erba and tzoras erba is yibum, but there's nothing wrong with doing chalitza. And on the contrary, as Rashi explains, you might think there's a zika and you need to do chalitza because there you can't implement yibum, but the connection is still there. Kamash malan kola ola li yibum ola la chalitza. There's a rule, and I want to expand on this rule either today or going forward. The rule is, if there's no potential of Yibum, there's no actualization of Chalitza, Yibum and Chalitza are inextricably connected. We need to know what that means and how that is to be understood. Let me just read another line and then I'll get back to
that. What makes a bracha on Chalitza?
Very good question. So, again, that was part of the Akdama that we didn't get to. But I think, actually, did I produce that again here? In these Marmakomos? I may have. Really? Just one second. Yeah. Oh, okay, good. Interesting question. Look at the last line on, at least for me, it's page... What? The new one. The new one. I don't know what it's called. I'm guessing it's page 4. I think it's the last piece, actually. The Ein Mevarchen? Everybody have that?
Yes.
Okay, great. So the Ein Mevarchen ala Chalitza. I told you I think that we were in collusion, you know. But the Ein Mevarchen ala Chalitza, like, you know, we coordinate. Ein Mevarchen ala Chalitza. This is a quotation from the... It's a tshuva of Rabbi Yosef ibn Palat. Those of you who remember our hopefully fondly, our Chulin days, will recall there's a very famous tshuva of Rabbi Yosef ibn Palat that he his exchange with the Ravid's father-in-law, who we call the Ravi Abad. Right? Instead of Avram ben David, his name was Avram ben Yitzchak. He was the Abbezin of Narbon, the Ravid's father-in-law. So he and Rabbi Yosef ibn Palat had this really interesting exchange, which everybody here has been connected with at one time or another. Why do I say that? This is the exchange to ask the question, how come sometimes we make a bracha and sometimes we don't make a bracha? Right? So anybody who's discussed this in any context has somehow touched on this, Rabbi Yosef ibn Palat. In other words, how come we don't make a bracha on Mishloach Manos? How come we don't make a bracha on Tzedakah? Right? How come we don't make a bracha on Bein Adam L'Chaveiro? All these famous questions. So there's a long tshuva of Rabbi Yosef ibn Palat where he tries to develop, right, the criteria for when we do and when we don't make brachos. Okay, so among other things, he discusses Yibum Mechalitza, which is why it's here, and he says, and we'll get back to this since you asked me. I'm just going to mention it. The Ein Mevarchen ala Chalitza. There's some Rishonim who disagree. This is Machlokes Rishonim when they make a bracha on Chalitza. Rabbi Yosef ibn Palat was of the opinion that, you know, by the way, just go back a few lines before, you'll just see. It says, Sefer HaBudram, Birchas HaMitzvah Mishpatayim. This is a tshuva that appears in a bunch of places, in the Bala Itur, in other collections. I just happened to take it from the Sefer HaBudram, where he records it. So you see the beginning is, Al-Zeh Sha'al HaRav HaRav Rabi Yitzhak Al-Bezdin. This is where the Rabbi Abad, the Ravid's father-in-law, asked Rabbi Yosef ibn Palat, Limsalo Mafteach Pahen, literally to give him the key. Right? Meaning, what is the secret? What are the rules? Which mitzvahs you make a bracha for now? Bezel Lishon HaSheva. Tzor Chadisha Timsa Li Mafteach Al Elu Mitzvos Mevarach Al Asiyasim. Then I've skipped a lot, and I quoted certain things because it serves our purposes. Anyway, the last one is Ein Mevarachin Al HaChalitza Mishum De Mitzvah Habab HaBeirahi De Ka'avar Al Asei De Yibum. Now that's a very fascinating formulation. We're going to get back to that. Probably not today completely, but it's relevant to what we're talking about in Kolol Yibum right now. The chain ena ishim bevarechas ala chalitza, the lo ala yibum, mishum de lo mitkada piri varivya. Each line is just better than the previous one. Right? There's no bracha on the chalitza because it's a mitzvah baba veira, whatever that means. Here, what he means is, he's using the phrase mitzvah baba veira. As it happens, what he means is, a kind of, or the equivalent of, lav hanitak la'aseh, or aseh hanitak la'aseh. How do I know that? Because he uses the same phrase, that's why I produced the top paragraph on top of it. It says, shiluach hakan, what is shiluach hakan? Lav hanitak la'aseh. What's nosar? Lav hanitak la'aseh. He calls them, shiluach hakan nami mitzvah baba beirahi. That's not mitzvah baba beirah, right? Tichsiv lo tikach ha'im al habanim, vim lakachat, Shalach tishalach. B'chein arifas petar chamor. Tifte b'seh. V'ilo tifteva arafto. B'chein sreifas nosar. It's just fascinating that he calls it. It's also important for mitzvah b'aveira and for lav anitha klasei. Right? Loso sirav anosar v'menu. Elu kulon umay didami l'mishim mitzvah b'aveira lomar b'chein alach. What he means is, these are things that we only do, that are only mitzvahs, in the context of having to clean up a mess. You put yourself in a situation, right, which you preferably should have avoided a b'di'eved kind of situation, so now it's nita klase. Right now there's a way for you to salvage, you know, the situation and, you know, to b'toras mitzvah. He's calling that, fascinatingly, a mitzvah b'aveir, and he calls chalitza that. But one of the reasons he also says chalitza, getting back, he's referring to the man, right, because he should be doing yibum. The kavra al sevi ibum, b'chein eno ishim emareches al hachali. Why about her? Not her fault, right? Doesn't matter. She doesn't make a bracha on chalitza or ibum. Why? Mishim delo mitkada piri of arivia. Also a very important line. Since she's not obligated in puruvu, somehow that means she's not obligated in ibum. Not everybody agrees with this at all. So number one, our rishonim would think that a woman is obligated in ibum. Others might just tell you, even if she's not. What does Piri Varivya have to do with Yibum? Right? This is not a davar pashut. Some Rishonim think it's a connection, some not. But it's something. The Aruch HaNer and the Avchav HaMin Aleph says, all the Rishonim are talking, quotes this tshuva and others, some sort of connection between Yibum and Piri Varivya, so I don't understand it at all. Because Lachim Shem Lachim, even one, you don't need a son and a daughter.
Yeah.
Right? Number two, if you're talking about the Isha, and let's say she has 30 children from previous marriage, right? She's still a Zakuka Li'ibum if the husband that she married now doesn't have any children. The Aruch HaNer is just trying to point out that factually, there's a huge discrepancy between the Dinim of Piri Varivya and the Din of Yibum. He says, I just don't understand. I have a suggestion, when we get back to it, I'll make it. But anyway, listen to the next line. V'chimen she'enem mitzvahs yibum, since she doesn't have yibum because she's not mitzvah peri v'ribya, whatever that means, ena b'mitzvahs chalitza. Why? U'karab yosi da'amar, quoting our Gemara, kol ha'ola l'yibum ola l'chalitza, alma chalitza v'yibum iskashi la'adai. This is particularly fascinating, I'll explain in a minute why, because this is well beyond what our Gemara says. Our Gemara says there's a link between yibum and chalitza, and this is one of a bunch of Makoros that extend that link. I'll explain why I think it's extended very significantly. We need to understand the din of the relationship between Yibum and Chalitza. But before we get to there, there are still a couple. I want to finish the last two lines of the Gemara first here, and then just speak about one other point first. Yeah.
We've never discussed whether the woman has a right to refuse. We've always assumed that
Well, she has a right to express her refusal, and then there's a debate in the Rishonim. I mean, the Chazal say that the connection in the Parsha, the Smichos Parshios, to what we call Chasoma Bekol, you know, Los Achsom, and Yibum, is to indicate that her preference, right, should be calculated into the mix. And she doesn't want to get married to somebody. Now the question is that only, you'll see, we already have enough Gimel and Beis, Rashi and Gimel and Beis, quotes it towards the, only if there's some objective reason, like he's a Mukashchin, right? Or even if there's some more subjective kind of consideration, that's a debate. That's it. We'll get to it.
You did. There's no bracha on chalitza. The more said before Michael Ovid.
Yeah.
Let her make chalitza. If there is a bracha on chalitza.
No, the Gemara says Michael Ovid, meaning you can't say the language of Isser and chalitza.
But the husband make a bracha on chalitza?
That's a makhluk, but the Rosh Palad is saying no one does.
No bracha at all.
Because for him it's a mitzvah bavei, or lavanita glase, or whatever.
Okay.
Yeah.
Does the husband make a bracha on Yibum?
So that's also makhlukas. So again, if you look, again, I don't want to get too involved in it for the moment, but look at the Chubas Araj Bechel, I like the piece on top. Oh, okay, we'll get it on the record and then we'll go past to the next time. Chubas Araj Bechel, Kalsamiyachas. You see the piece on top of that? A different explanation. This is to explain also why he doesn't make the bracha.
Right.
He doesn't make it because she doesn't make it, therefore neither to make. Now in Shulchan Aruch there's a debate, there are 2 days in Shulchan Aruch, whether you make a bracha on Yibum or not, whether he makes a bracha.
He doesn't make it because she doesn't make it?
Yeah, meaning it's if it's a joint mitzvah, right, and one of them doesn't make it, then it's not a mitzvah in a bracha for the other as well. We'll explain it when we get to it. Okay, now, before, just let me finish the lines on the Gemara. I want to make sure we make enough progress, and I want to speak about this a little bit more. So the Gemara says, "V'lishni mina yibum mina chalitza." So then, why not say, right, "mina yibum mina chalitza"? Inami mina chalitza lechuda. Say there's no chalitza, and then you'd understand that there's no yibum. So the Gemara says, Abba Shali. This is where the Gemara first introduces, even though this isn't the main discussion of Abba Shal. The main discussion of Abba Shal is on Lamed Tes on the base. But this is Abba Shal. Who's Abba Shal? The Amar, mitzvahs chalitza, kodemes, the mitzvahs yibum. The question is yibum in this chalitza? And the question is, what is the relationship between it? The answer is, it's a very fascinating phenomenon. It's connected with Kolon Le'ibam, and it's connected to the whole Masechta. Meaning, the idea of two mitzvahs, or two options in a mitzvah that appear simultaneously, is very unusual. Right? It's almost without precedent. But the other, the closest precedent, is actually, Pidgin and Arifas, Peter Chamor. Right? Peter Chamor Tifteh Besteh? And if not, Barapto. That's one of the examples that the Abudram called a second ago, Mitzvah Babaveir. The Rambam in Sefer Mitzvos, Mitzvah Teitei, when he speaks about Petra Chamor, compares it to Yibum and Chalitza, the two options. It's a very unusual thing to have two right simultaneous options in a mitzvah. Again, the other cases that they're calling mitzvah babaveira, which are kind of lava nita klasai, are just that they're lava nita klasai. You steal something, but you can give it back. You did, you took the bird, but you could send the mother away. Right? You left over the korban, right? You didn't eat it in its time. Right, at least you could burn it. But they're not simultaneous options, like Yibum and Chalitza. It's a very fascinating question. So, partly the Gemara records a debate in Lama Tessa and the Beis, what's the relationship? Are they equal options? Which one is better? Etc. So most views in the Gemara is that Yibum is preferred to Chalitza. It sounds that way in the Parsha, in the Torah, in Kitetze as well. So if you don't do Yibum, in Lo Tachbot, right, say Mein Yivami, then you do Chalitza. So even though there's simultaneous options, there's a preference. Abishol disagrees. Now why does Abishol disagree? So the Gemara in Lamed Tes on the Beis explains that it's because he has incredibly ambitious precarious standards for Yibum. And therefore, he doesn't want you to risk Yibum. Because an improper Yibum, according to Abishol, Yibum requires purity of motive. Lishma. It's also very strange. Very unusual. And we know Lishma in, you know, Stam, means Hevtor, Tzvillim, Mezuzah, Karbonos, right, things of that sort. Not in, there's no Lishma in Ishus. You might have Kabana. Lishma and Kabana are two different things, right? Lishma is like, why are you doing it? What's the motivation? So just very, very quickly, here on Lama Tessama Beis, the Gemara quotes the discussion. Lama Tessama Beis. Take the two dots, four lines into the, again, wider, not widest, lines. Barishona shahayu miskavnin l'shem mitzvah. In the olden days, you know, the good old days, you know, when everything was, you know, done properly, okay? Remember those days? So, when they could be miskavnin properly l'shem mitzvah. So mitzvah yibum kodemus l'mitzvah chalitza. So then yibum was preferred to chalitza. The achshav shein miskavnin l'shem mitzvah nowadays, right, where no one can do anything right. Right? So, Amru mitzvah chalitza kodemus l'mitzvah yibum. Amar Rabbi Bachamar Bietzot, Chazru Lomar Mitzvah Yibum Kodemus Mitzvah Chalitza. But then they recanted and they said, no, even Bizmanenu, Yibum is preferred. Amar Rabbi Nachamar Yitzhak, Achshur Dari. Like, the generations actually became better. Impossible, right? So the Gemara says, no. Mikar Sabri Kabashal. The generations, you know, continue to deteriorate. However, right, whether this is in principle or just Lemaisa, probably Lemaisa, but the point is, Meikara Sabri Kabashal. Originally we thought that we're held to the strict, rigorous standard of Abashal. Well, Lemaisov Sabri Lot Karabon. What are we talking? What's Abashal? Titania, Abashal Omer, Akonis Sivimta Lashem Noi. Let's say he's in a Yibum situation, and he marries her because she's, because of her beauty, right? Right? So that's his incentive. L'shem Ishus, or he says, you know what, I always wanted to marry that woman. Yeah. Nebuch, you know, my brother beat me to the punch. Now I can, be married to the woman of my dreams. What's wrong? I mean, it's Yibum. It ends up being Ishus, right? You need a get. You need, there's Machzor Grushaso. The same dinim, the Gemara says, we might have thought not, that if you do Yibum and you want to exit that marriage, the Gemara says also, you know, here on a few places, including the Flamites, Omen Aleph, that, you know, you might have thought you need Chalitza, but it's not true. Right? The Kochal Isha, she becomes his wife. See, again. So what's wrong with Shem Isha? Given the context and opportunity. Lushim Davar Acher, maybe there's some financial aspect or some other aspect. So Abishol says, Ki ilu pogea be'erevur. Strong words. Right? The Karavani Be'ina Elios Havlad Mamzer. So that's why Abishol says, if you can't calibrate your kavana perfectly, I think is a very important shita. Rabbeinu Tam thinks that we hold like Abishol. Most Rishonim don't. But even if you don't, what Abishol highlights is something that we've been talking about all year so far. Years and so advanced. But namely, which is the idea that Yibum, right, is on the precipice. Right? Yibum is always challenged by Znus, by Ishasach. And what you need to do, but if you can do it, right, then you've accomplished a great deal, is turn Yibum into a Kedushas Ishus of its own. Abishol says it depends on your motivation, on your purity of motivation, on the Lishma. Chachamim omrim, Yibama Yabo Olami Komako. Now, because they think that anything goes, they just think the motivation part, the Lishma part, isn't necessary. Hard to know. Anyways, the question of which is first, Yibum or Chalitza, whether we pass like Abishol, Machlokas Rishon, Rabbeinu Tam, hold like Abishol, most Rishonim hold like the Chachamim, but that's what's being reflected here on Daf Gimel Amud Aleph. That's the Gemara here so far. Okay, let me stop here and speak about two things quickly. Number one, so what about this Hava Mina that we might have thought that Erva applies to Yibum, is a problem for Yibum, Erva and Saras Erva is a problem for Yibum, but not for Chalitza. The Gemara has it twice here on Gimel Amud Aleph. Right? Maybe Chalitza is fine, you have to do Chalitza, and there's a Chalos Chalitza. So the Gemara says, no, Kama Ol Yibum Ol L'Chalitza, Kol She'en Ol Yibum Ein Ol L'Chalitza. If there's no Yibum, there's no Chalitza either. And the Gemara didn't notice in Havamina. Right? This is actually based on a pasuk. If you look on Daf Chaf Amud Aleph, just for a second. Very famous Gemara, which we're also going to get to. Gemara says, Amar Rav Gidl Amar Rav, this is six lines before the bottom. Amar Rav Gidl Amar Rav, now it's five lines before the bottom. Right? Amar Kra, five lines up from the bottom of the page. If there was a Gilly in the Shas around, I the also Yevemto Hasha'ara. Right? Shein Tamud Lomar Yevemto, Ma Tamud Lomar Yevemto. The word Yevemto is superfluous in this pasuk. Yeshecha Yevama Achas She'ola L'chalitza Ve'ena L'yibum Ve'ezesu Chai Ve'lam. This is a Hava Min of the Gemara. Gemara thinks that it's only if the prohibition isn't erva, kares, or worse, it's only Chai Ve'lamin. Let's say Grusha L'kohen. Right? So then you have a situation of Ola L'yibum, even though it's, I'm sorry, Ola L'chalitza, even though it's not Ola L'yibum. Fine. So the Gemara says, Ema Chai V'krisas. So the Gemara said, and what, maybe it's true of Chai V'krisas too, which is exactly our Habamin in a way. But you have a Bito, or Chamin, his mother-in-law, right? His mother-in-law, after the father-in-law died, married his brother now dies, she's a candidate for Yibum. That's Chai V'krisas. Right? At minimum, it's actually more. It's Reifa. Anyways, so Ema Chai V'krisas, maybe there should be Chalitza, even though there's no Yibum. It's exactly a Habamin of our Gemara in Gimel and Aleph. So the Gemara says, Omar Kra, Im lo yachbot sa'ish, lakachas, hachafetz miyabe, kol olibam ol l'chalitza, kol she'en olibam in ol l'chalitza. Right? This din, that Yibam and Chalitza are inextricably linked, is a din based on Xeris HaKas. So why the Gemara in Gimel and Aleph, they had it, they said it's not true, right? They thought maybe you could say Chalitza no Yibam, kamash malam. Then they brought it back again. Maybe you can say Chalitza no Yibum, Kamashman. What's going on? It's a Xeris HaKas. So the Ritva has a very interesting idea. I don't think I produced it here. The Ritva, I think I did. No. The Ritva has an interesting idea. The Ritva says the Habamin on Gimel of Aleph was only Tsaras Erva. The Gemara thought that Erva, that's the daughter herself, was one of the candidates for Yibum, and Chalitza, of course, is no Yibum, it's his daughter. Right? It was obvious to the Gemara that if she's Mufka mi Yibum, because she's an Erva, then she's Mufka from Chalitza as well. But Sara's Erva, that they didn't know. And that's the Kamashma. Why is that so important? Because it's highlight what we're going to keep seeing. These two ideas of Tsaras Erva that we spoke about before. Right? One was, Tsaras Erva sounds like Tsaras Erva, and it really does start off by being Tsaras Erva, but at the end of the day, Tsaras Erva reduces to what? Erva itself, Eishes Ach. Because if you don't have a smooth path to Yibum, what happens? The Iser Eishes Ach, Ki'ilu Yesh Labanim, or Ki'ilu Ein Makom Mitzvah, reasserts itself, and an Eishes Ach is an Erva like a Bas is an Erva. So even though it's a Tsaras Erva and she's not your daughter, but she is your sister-in-law, as if there were children. If that's true, then what the Ritva says makes no sense. Because what's the Ritva saying? We knew that Erva, if there's no Yibum, there's no Chalitza. We just didn't know it about Tsaras Erva. What do you mean we didn't know about Tsaras Erva? Tsaras Erva is Erva. Because since there's no Yibum, there's Eishes Ach. If there's Eishes Ach, there's Erva. And there's no Chalitza. So it had to be that the Ritva is saying the other idea. Even the Mokom Yibum. The Ritva is saying, listen, it's true that on Yud Gimel Amud Aleph, the Mishnah says that outside of Yibum, there is no din of Tsaras Erva. But still we might think that Tsaras Erva is about the shame Tsaras Erva, the status of being a co-wife with one of the Arayos, and the mixing of these households. The only thing is that in order for that to be, there has to be something that is mitzaref that links the households together in a halachic way. Meaning, if my son-in-law has three wives, one of whom is my daughter, that's what makes him my son-in-law, right? And two other wives. So is there any reason for me to be thinking after he dies or after he divorces and he's out of the picture, oh, this is the co-wife of my daughter. What is there to be the tzaret to link together these three wives? They're each one's an independent agent. There's nothing, no reason to draw a circle around them after the fact. Once he dies, and all three of them are exempt from him, right? Then each one is an independent agent. And they used to be all living in one household. That was a Havamina. But that's enough to connect them for good, right? That's past history. It's presently irrelevant. However, in the case of Yibum, the Zika is a Mitzarev. He dies, he leaves wives. You have to relate to one of the three, one of the package. There is a package. Each one is Zikuka the Omedes right now. So right now there's something that binds these women together even after the husband has died, because he's died in this state, and that's the Din Torah of Yibum. There's a shame Tsaras Erba. The shame Tsaras Erba is Kobeas. So I might have said, it's Midin, shame Tsaras Erba, that's still the same as Erba. There's a difference between an actual Erba and a Tsaras Erba. Now Erba is powerful enough to create an association. Right, but an association is still not an erba. Now there are those, they quote this in the name of the Prima God, and there seems to be some other evidence about it too, that think that Tsaras Erba really has the dinim of an erba. Like if she's the co-wife of your daughter, she has the Isur of Das. That's a very big chiddush. I find that to be very difficult to accept, but there is some evidence for it. What I'm suggesting is something different. She's not your daughter, but she is Tsaras Bito. So the Havamina was, that's an erva, or an extended erva, but a diluted erva. It's enough there to say there's no Yibum. You don't have to say there's no Zika, there's no Chalitza. Hamashmala. So we'll be tracking Tsaras Erva in these two perspectives as we go forward. But just an added perspective. In the beginning of the year in Akdama, I started off by saying, right, now why is it two things. That Yibamos, according to many schemes, is the introduction to Seder Nashim. Right? And also, why is it that we begin Yibamos with the exceptions, the Erva and Tsaras Erva, which don't work? Right? And we try to explain, I've been trying to explain that, the idea is that the special Achrayas, the family has, right, that goes beyond the actual Ishus, but the family's obligation in Ishus, makes us a perfect beginning for Ishus and Kedushas Ishus. Moreover, Yibum Shel Kedusha, the demand of Abba Shaul, if you want to call it, or the echo of it for the Chachamim, right? To turn this into a Yibum Shel Kedusha, right, that's a very inspiring and high ambition in Ishus. Moreover, the Tzivanu Al Arayos, the people who are off with it, reflect the ambition of what you're trying. They're off limit because you're trying to build a davar shel kedusha, not simply accomplish mahakim la'achid shem b'Yisrael. All these things, we've been trying to weave all these things together. So another one to add to the mix is the idea of Tsaras Erva, because Tsaras Erva, especially in the context of Yibum, highlights this idea that again there's a wider extension of family and of kurva, right? She's my daughter's co-wife, but from a tzniyah's point of view, that's still relevant. And from an isha's point of view, there's a shame, tsaras erva. And that idea of tsaras erva, right, of this all being one family unit and spilling over, lekula and lechumra, right, is something that highlights kedushas, ishus, and makes for a perfect beginning of nashim, and this being a perfect beginning of Yibamos. Now, let's take it a step further. Rashi, when he quotes this kala ola liyibam ola lechalitza, here has an interesting comment. Rashi says, "Dibra maschol havamina miklatz cholza." Everybody have it? This is 3-5 lines from the bottom of the page on Gimel Amud Aleph. Rashi says, "Havamina miklatz cholza." So Rashi says, Shalola hafkia mitzvah yibum. You might have to do chalitza, right? Even though there's no yibum, because also it's a very interesting language of Rashi. Shalola hafkia mitzvah yibum, you do chalitza. Rashi seems to be weighing in on one aspect of the relationship between Yibum and Chalitza, which we'll get to. I say this phenomenon of being presented with two choices, seemingly very different, but at the same time. To say we have in Petra Kamar and you have in Yibum. Rarely do you have it elsewhere. Rashi calls Chalitza here a solution to mitzvahs Yibum. That itself is interesting, and we'll get back to that. And it's important to the Nita Klase, and the Nitzvah Babera, the Kolol Yibum Ol Chalitza. We'll get back to all that. But then Rashi goes further and says, Aval Yivume Lo, Mishum Gzeres HaKosov Dilitzror, Kamash Lamasisin, therefore the Mishnah teaches us, Holu Patra Habas Mizika Sibum, Ptura Mina Chalitza, there's no Chalitza either. The Kola Ola, now notice, comes as part of the solution to the question that I haven't just answered, yet asked, the Rashi adds a word that doesn't appear in the Gemara, and he adds that word repeatedly. Not every single time, but almost every single time. The word Zika. Right? Kala Ola, the language of the Gemara, the Chafam and Aleph, and here is Kala Ola Yibum Ola Lechalitza, Kol She'ino Ola Yibum, Eino Ola Lechalitza. Rashi adds, Kala Ola Lezikas Yibum, Ola Lezikas Chalitza. Kol She'ino Ola Lezikas Yibum, Ptura, this is the one time that he doesn't say it, Mina Chalitza. Why this added word Zika? Nothing wrong with it, but it's a certain, you know, rhythm, you know. We wonder what it's about. Well, I think the answer will be clear in a moment. See, there's a little notation here. Next. A little round circle. That's a reference to Rabbi Kivager. So, the Chol Hecha, Rashi adds, Darbina Choletzis, Velomis Yavemis, Mishum Steko. Rashi says, since there's a rule, Kol Ol Yibum, Ol Chalitza, Kol Shein Ol Yibum, Ol Chalitza, since there is such a rule, right, so how come we find in the Mishnah, and Avchapam, and Aleph, look, let's just turn there for a moment, Chaf Amud Aleph, Mishnah says Klal Amru B'Yibam. There's a rule in Yibum. Kol Shi Iser Erva Lo Choletzes V'Lo Mesevemes. If you have an Iser Erva, being Kares or something like that, there's no Yibum and there's no Chalitza. But Iser Mitzvah, Iser Kedusha Choletzes V'Lo Mesevemes. However, if the prohibition is Chayde Labin or Drabanan, as the Gemara explains it, then it's Choletzes V'Lo Mesevemes. There's Chalitza without Yibum. Ah, now. Rashi addressing this phenomenon, especially because the Gemara itself, as we explained before, on the bottom of this Amud, Chaf Amud Aleph, that's where we read the Gzeres HaKosov before, Kol Ol Yibum Ol Lechalitza, Kol She'ein Ol Yibum Ein Ol Lechalitza. Correct? So the question is, how can you have a Mishnah that says that something is Ol Lechalitza, not Yibum? So Rashi's answer is, it's a Didrabanan, and it's Mishum Safek, if you're not sure how to paskin. Right, so you have to be machmir and have a chalitza just in case there's a zika, and you have to, but you can't be miyabim because it might be ervas, eshes, ach. So what can you do? Misafek chalitza bli ibum. But in Okanami, Rashi's saying doraisa, there's no chalitza without ibum. That's what Rashi's saying. That's too different. What's Rabbi Kivager? So if you look at Rabbi Kivager on Gimel and Aleph in the Gilin Hashas, so he says, what is he saying? Again, I don't have time now because we have to finish in like 1 minute or so. Right? We always finish on time. So, right? So basically, what is Rabbi Kivager referring to? The Gemara, right, labors very hard for like an hour and a half. Try to figure out if the Mishnah's category of Choletzes, V'lo Mesevemes, is Doraisa Drabanan. So mostly the Gemara seems to conclude that it's Rabbanan. Chayve Labin. Midoraisa, there's Yibum and Chalitza. Midrabbanan, right, there's only Chalitza below Yibum. That's a Din Rabbanan. However, the simple reading of the Gemara is that when it comes to Amana Lekoin Gadol Nesua, which is Aseh Velo Saseh, Kohen Gadol's not allowed to marry an Amana. A, she's an Amana, and that's an Iser. B, she's not a Nesula if she's a Nesua. Amana and Nesua, right? She'd already been not only Mu'ureses, but actually Nises to someone else, so she's not a Be'ula, right? So who Be'sula?
She is
a Be'ula, so she's not a Be'sula, sorry. Right? So Be'sula Be'ama B'yikach Isha. So it's a violation of a Lav and an Aseh. And the din is that Ein Aseh, when it comes to Lavin, we say Aseh Tochelos Aseh. So if all you have is Chayvei Lav, you have a mitzvah of Yibum. This is the Gemara. You have a mitzvah of Yibum, and you have the Iser of Lo Saseh, and Aseh is Docha Lo Saseh. So how come there's no Yibum? So the Gemara says, on Chafam and Beis, it's a Din Drabanan. Bia Rishona atu bia shnia. We'll read it next time. However, when it comes to Amana l'kohen gadol mina nesuin, where she is a beula, so there's a violation of asay and alav. So it's asay against los asay v'asay, ein asay docha los asay v'asay. And therefore, it sounds like the Gemara is saying that the din of chalitza b'liyibum is doraisa. Now, the Ramban there, or the Tosa Rosh there, quote another sheet which says it's not true. It's not true. There's no chalitza even in our Torah. The chalitza there is only drabon. Okay. But the simple reading of the Gemara in Rashi, Tosas there, there's chalitza and no yibum in our Torah. So how could Rashi say, that's where the Gnager is bothered by. How could Rashi say here, kol ole yibum ole chalitza, kol she'en ole yibum in ole chalitza, and the exception is always midin safek, meaning it's a din drabonon, or safek. What happened to Amanu l'kohen gadol? Amanu minasu in l'kohen gadol? That's what Vega's question. But I think the answer is, and I think others say this as well, based on the emphasis of Rashi. Why does Rashi keep adding the word Zika, 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 three out of the four times at least? Well, we have this rule called Ola Liibum, Ola Chalitza, Kol She'en Ola Liibum, En Ola Chalitza. There are two ways to learn it. And they're very consequential to the two topics that we're addressing here. Right. One is the nature of the Ptur Erba B'Yibum, which we've been discussing. Is that because L'maisa is a mitzvah of Yibum, but you have a counter pressure of the Isur of Kares, and it's Aseh against the Mos Aseh Sheyesh Bo Kares, and the question is, what gives? Right? Or, there's a din of Kedushas Ishus Shel Yibum, and that requires, right, that there not be Isurim that you're trampling upon. Ah, Yeshasach, you're trampling on that. You're not trampling on that. But Mokom, Sheim, Banim, right? That's this Kedushas Ishus. What would be a betrayal, right? An unacceptable rivalry is in fact a chesed. It's the family continuing the Ishus of the brother. But not if it's also your daughter or your daughter-in-law or your sister-in-law, because then it's not only Abishol. Abishol is worried about your kavana, right? Forget about Abishol, but you can't talk about Kedushas Ishus when you're trampling on other Isurim that have nothing to do with the Ach part. Oh. So the question is, when we say Erba is Mufka Miyibum, do we just mean you can't implement it, or do we mean there's no Zika? If we say it's a kind of Dechia problem, so basically we're saying there's a mitzvah, there's an Isur, there's Zika, but you just can't do it. So then, why not Chalitza? But if you say it's about Kedushas Ishus and the Mokum Erva, the whole thing doesn't apply, then you're likely to say there's no Zika. If there's no Zika, there's no Chalitza. So basically, there are two overlapping issues. One is, why is Erva Mufka B'Yibum? Meaning, how do we understand Yibum? Do we understand it as a mitzvah? Or do we understand it as a kind of Kedushas Ishus? Number two, they affect each other. What is the relationship when we say kol ol yibum ol chalitza, kol she'en ol yibum en ol chalitza? What do we mean? We're not saying that yibum and chalitza are inextricably linked. What we're saying is they share something in common, the zika. But beyond the zika, are we saying kol ol yibum ol chalitza? Not necessarily. Unless we say that the problem is not one of Zika, but it's an implementation problem, then it sounds like what we're saying is, you know what, Chalitza never exists if Labaisa, you haven't passed up Yibum. It's a kind of mitzvah b'avera, tikkun la'aseh, then it's only going to be if you neglected the one. These two issues, very different issues, depending on how you read the Gemara, though, are linked. So I think that's a pshat in Rashi. What Rashi's saying is, not that there's no case, d'oraisa, where there's Chalitza b'li Yibum. Rashi knows about Amana l'kohen gadol, mina nesuin, and he doesn't interpret like Ramban. But Rashi will say, that's a case where there's tefisas kedushin when there's an iser asay v'lav. Right? It's not erva. It's a problem of ein asay docha los asay v'asay. Right? But the zika, if the zika, then there could be chalitza d'oraisa even without evil. When we say kalola yiva bol lechalitza kol she'enu yiva enu liyol lechalitza, what we mean is it's a shear in the zika, right? When there's a zika problem, then there's never a chalitza b'li yibum. That's the issue of Erevah. Just to highlight it for 30 more seconds, we talk about the bracha, right? That's why I say it was an amazing extension. The Rav Yosef Palat says, if you don't make a bracha, if the woman's not going to make a bracha for Yibam, she's not going to make a bracha for Chalitza either. Because kol Yibam ol Chalitza, kol Shemel Yibam ol Chalitza. That has nothing to do with Zika. That's a case where there's Zika, there's Yibam, and there's Chalitza. That's an example of kol Yibam ol Chalitza, which is about the connection between the institution of Chalitza the Yibam, not about the common denominator of Zika. That's what we have to continue to investigate in this topic. Okay, we'll continue.